Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere MQ Queue Manager Clusters. Today's presenter is Tim Elwood. Tim has been with the WebSphere MQ Distributed Support Team since September 2008. His responsibilities now include providing focused customer support within the application and integration middleware division. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Tim.
Thank you, Joseph, and good day, everyone, and welcome to this presentation on WebSphere MQ Basic Queue Manager Clusters. I have a colleague, Yana Johnson, on the line with me today, and she will be assisting with any Q&A at the end of my presentation.
Hello, everybody.
Joseph, if we could start on slide two there. Some of the topics that I'll be sharing with you today include the different terminology that is in a clustered environment and a little bit about how they are used, the benefits of using an MQ cluster, how queue manager clusters work, as well as some of the inner workings, how to set up a basic cluster, and some details on partial and full repositories, some cluster display commands and what they are used for, details on clustered topics, which is new to MQ version 7, some troubleshooting tips, education, must gather, and helpful hints and links, and references to IBM helpful tech notes. The terminology is important to become familiar with for various reasons, and so we'll begin with that on slide three. I'm going to be covering some of the key definitions and terminology of clusters that will help you to better understand some components of a WebSphere MQ cluster. Since we can all relate to vehicles, I thought it best to try and relate some of the MQ cluster definitions to that, which hopefully should put these MQ components into a bit more perspective for you. A cluster is a network of queue managers that are logically associated in some way. Think of different brands of cars, for example, Toyota, Nissan, Ford, Chevy. A cluster queue manager is a queue manager that is a member of a cluster. It's much like the engine of the car, which helps to keep things moving or running. A cluster queue is a queue that is hosted by a cluster queue manager and made available to other queue managers in the cluster. And you can think of these as the seats in a car where they are available to multiple people to sit in. A repository is a collection of information about the queue managers that are members of a cluster. And they can be related to that of a mechanic book, which has all the information about the inner workings of a vehicle. I'm going to continue with additional terminology on slide four. The repository queue manager is a cluster queue manager that holds a full repository. We can relate this to an engine's computer module or brain of the engine that helps tie everything about the engine's performance or other inner workings, like the performance or other inner workings of the cluster queue manager. The full repository houses all the details about every queue manager. This might be like a car manufacturer who has all the details about the car they manufacture. And the partial repository only has partial sets of cluster information. Much like an auto mechanic might only know certain aspects of certain types, makes, or models of cars, they might not have all the details needed or know about a particular type of vehicle and might have to make a request to the manufacturer for additional details, much like a partial repository making a request or getting an update from a full repository. Slide five. Like the auto mechanic who might make a request to a manufacturer for additional details, the cluster receiver and cluster sender channels can receive and send cluster information to other clustered queue managers. The cluster sender channel can be used by application messages as well to send to other clustered queue managers. I'll discuss more about cluster receiver and cluster sender channels further on in the presentation. Slide six. And lastly, about terminology, here's where things get a little bit more complex. These queues are the system-defined queues. The system cluster transmit queue holds outbound administrative and user messages, as well as containing the name of the channel that the message should be sent down. The system cluster command queue holds inbound administrative messages, and the IP prox should always be 1. The curb depth should be 0 or decrementing. If it's not, it's advised to check for error messages. I'll show you how to display these queues later on. The system cluster repository queue, this holds a hardened view of the repository cache, and the curb depth varies depending on checkpoints. Usually, it's not a problem. It should be noted that these queues are for internal use only. It is important that applications do not put or get messages from the system cluster queues. This is the end of some of the terminology for MQ clusters before we get into looking at a basic cluster overview on slide 7, please. This is a pictorial overview of cluster components and shows how they work within a cluster. The diagram shows the components of a cluster called cluster. And in this cluster, there are 3 queue managers, QM1, QM2, and queue manager 3. QM1 and QM2 host the repository's information and full repository queue managers. And if you look at the diagram, the repositories are represented in the diagram by the shaded cylinders in QM1 and QM2. QM2 and QM3 host some cluster queues that are accessible to any other queue manager in the cluster. The cluster queues are represented there in the diagram by the shaded queues. Each queue manager has a definition for the receiving end of a channel called 2.qmgr on which it can receive messages. This is known as a cluster receiver channel. Each queue manager also has a definition for the sending end of a channel which connects to the cluster receiver channel of one of the full repository queue managers. This is a cluster sender channel, and in this figure, QM1 and QM3 have cluster sender channels connecting to the 2.qm2 queue manager, and QM2 has a cluster sender channel connecting to the 2.qm1 queue manager. We'll be looking at some of the key benefits of MQ clustering on slide 8. There are 2 main benefits for using MQ clustering, which is to simplify administration, and it helps with workload balancing by spreading the load of the work and helping to route around failures. It's also easier, as I said, for system administration, improved scalability, and the workload can be distributed. So let's take a look at how all this works in the next few slides. Slide 9. From the description of the picture, it's showing both manual and auto-defined channels, which are needed for queue managers to communicate with each other. We have in this diagram queue manager 1 and queue manager 2, our full repositories, again, shown by the shaded cylinders. The solid lines represent manually defined cluster receiver and cluster sender channels. The 2 dashed lines represent cluster sender channels that have been created automatically. And on QM2 and QM3, they host some clustered queues that can be put to by any other queue manager in this cluster. All queue managers have a system cluster transmit queue from which they can send messages to any other queue manager in the same cluster. Now that I've shown a high-level diagram, I'm going to discuss more about how all these pieces fit or work within a queue manager cluster. Slide 10, please. The repository manager process, which governs all queue manager cluster activity for a queue manager, is the AMQ-RRMFA. And every cluster has at least 1, preferably 2, queue managers holding full repository information about the queue managers, queues, and channels in a cluster. These repositories also contain requests from the other queue managers in the cluster for updates to the information. Slide 11. Each queue manager stores its repository information in messages on a queue called System Cluster Repository Queue. The queue managers exchange repository information in messages on a queue called System Cluster Command Queue. Each queue that joins a cluster needs to have defined a cluster receiver and cluster sender channel definition to one of the repositories. When both the cluster sender end and the cluster receiver end of a channel are defined, the channel is started. When it does this, it immediately learns which other queue managers in the cluster hold full repositories. From then on, the queue manager can request information from any of the repositories. This is why it's stressed to ensure that you have two full repositories in a cluster. Each key manager that joins a cluster will need to have manually defined, again, cluster sender channel to one of the full repositories. A full repository is updated when the queue manager hosting it receives new information from one of the queue managers that's linked to it. Slide 12. Queue managers build up their partial repositories through making inquiries to full repositories. When a partial repository first needs to access another queue or queue manager within a cluster. And so how it does this is a cluster sender channel is defined on the partial repository. And the queue manager name seen when doing a display plus QMGR command shows a name that starts with something system.tempqmgr. This name will be changed when the partial repository has communicated with the full repository and found out the real name of the full repository. A cluster receiver channel is defined on the partial repository, and once both a cluster sender channel and a cluster receiver channel for the same cluster are defined, the repository task starts the cluster sender channel to the full repository. And then the information from the cluster receiver channel on the partial repository is sent to the full repository, and which it uses to construct an auto-defined cluster sender channel back to the partial repository. The repository task on the full repository then starts the channel back to the partial repository and sends back the information from its cluster receiver channel. The partial repository then merges the information from the full repository's cluster receiver channel with that from its manually defined cluster sender channel, and the information from the full repository's cluster receiver channel takes precedence. Slide 13. Within clusters, messages are distributed between cluster key managers on manually defined cluster receiver and cluster sender channel definitions, and all the updates exchanged by the full repositories flow exclusively on these channels. Let's take a look at an example of a simple MQ cluster and how one is set up. Slide 14. This basic scenario shows setting up an MQ cluster with an inventory queue. Many of you have probably seen this example. I've used this example from the Queue Manager Clusters manual for any future references you might have. You can take a look back at the manual and reference this. In the example, we're setting up a new WebSphere MQ network for a chain store. The two queue managers, London and New York, are geographically dispersed queue managers and are to be linked in a cluster called Inventory so that they can both put messages to the Inventory queue or the Invent queue. Both queue managers are full repositories in this case, and we have full repository in New York and a full repository in London. So what needs to be decided from a 30,000-foot level to set up a basic MQ cluster? We'll take a look at this in slide 15. Decide on the organization of the cluster and its name. It's important to decide on where and how you want your cluster organized for future expansion, capacity planning, ease of administration, number of queue managers, and these are all some types of considerations. Determine which queue managers should hold full repositories. And again, it is recommended that two full repositories be used in case one full repository goes down. You should still have one full repository that will be available to all the other partial cluster queue managers in the cluster. Like the previous example, there are only two queue managers, London and New York, of which both hold full repositories. So this is an example of a high availability or HA type environment. On each queue manager that is to hold a full repository, you need to alter the queue manager definition. Using the alter QMGR command and specify the repos attribute as shown in the example there. It's important to note that if you just run MQSC and enter the alter QMGR command, you're just altering the local queue manager will be changed. Once deciding on the full repositories, the next thing to do is to define the communication channels. Next slide, 16. On every queue manager, in a cluster, you need to define a cluster receiver channel on which the queue manager can receive messages. This definition defines the queue manager's connection name, and the cluster keyword shows the queue manager's availability to receive messages from other queue managers in the cluster. On the London queue manager, we define the 2.London queue manager, and as shown in the example, that 2.London is the channel that you're defining. As shown in the example, then you define the 2.New York channel. Once both the cluster receiver end and the cluster sender end of a channel has been defined, the channel will start automatically, as I mentioned before. Slide 17. In the example MQ cluster, we had two queue managers that hold full repositories. We've set up the cluster receiver, and now on every queue manager in a cluster, you need to define one cluster sender channel that the queue manager can send messages to one of the other full repository queue managers. Again, they must each have a cluster sender definition that points to the cluster receiver channel defined at the other queue manager. Now that we have our channel set up and the two-way communication has been established, we can take a look at setting up our queues on slide 18. So now we define the inventory queue or the invent queue from the example. This queue is defined on the New York queue manager. And as soon as the queue is defined, it becomes available to the other queue managers in the cluster. They can send messages to it without having to make a remote queue definition for it. The channel initiator will need to be started as well, which the channel listener is a listener program on each queue manager. The listener program listens for incoming network requests and starts the cluster receiver channel when it's needed. One of the last steps will be to test the setup. Slide 19. In order to verify and test the cluster, you can issue some display commands and to verify the clusters that's been set up. The responses you see should be similar to those shown in the examples that follow. From the New York queue manager, issue the command display plus QMGR with an asterisk. In the example, it shows the display of the cluster queue manager New York and the cluster it resides in, which is the inventory. More display cluster commands will be given later on. We can also display the status. Slide 20. Issuing the corresponding display channel status command, display channel status asterisk, will show the state or status of the channel. Because the inventory queue has been advertised to the cluster, there's no need for remote queue definitions. Applications running on New York and applications running on London can put messages to the inventory queue. They can receive responses to their messages by providing a reply to queue and specifying its name when they put messages. The next slide shows more on testing the queues and setup. Slide 21. There's an example test program that comes with MQ. Many of you may be familiar with it already. And this will allow you to test your setup by sending some messages between the two queue managers using AMQS put. In the following example, London puts three messages to the inventory queue at the New York queue manager. On London, you issue the command AMQS put, inventory invent queue London. You type your messages out, and then on New York, I issue the command AMQS get, inventory New York, and you should see the messages you entered on the London queue manager. You can also use the display command to display the number of messages that are on the queues. Slide 22. Like from the previous example of sending a test message, you can only get from a local cluster queue. The inventory queue being on the New York cluster queue manager, but you can put to any queue in the cluster. If you open a queue to use the MQ get command, the queue manager will only use the local queue. Once a cluster is set up, you can move cluster queues from one queue manager to another within the cluster without having to do any system management work on any other queue manager. The cluster keyword causes the queue to be advertised to the cluster. As soon as the queue is defined, it becomes available to the other queue managers in the cluster. They send messages to it without having to make a remote queue definition for it. This is how one would go about setting up a basic MQ cluster. Some things to keep in mind about multiple full repositories we'll take a look at on slide 23, please. Have at least two full repositories to avoid a single point of failure, but with good reason you can certainly have more than two. Having full repositories on HA machines is preferred, and full repositories must be fully interconnected by having manually defined cluster sender channels. In this example, I'm showing two full repositories, but if there were a third or a fourth one, one would need to ensure that they are fully interconnected as well. If at least one full repository is not available or they're not fully connected, cluster definition changes from full repositories will not get picked up or processed. However, user messages between partial repositories over existing channels will continue to flow. On the next slide are some display commands that will help us to see what we have. Slide 24. Some of the following display commands have or will be used throughout the examples or can be used in your MQ clustered environment to help get details about a cluster. These are only a few of the different types of display commands that are available. You can enter display enter at the RunMQSC to see a full list or reference the MQ administration manual for additional details. Some of the new features in MQ version 7, slide 25, please. Some components of MQ version 7 that have changed or been enhanced are administration, clients, JMS, programming, publish-subscribe. Publish-subscribe has been changed significantly, but I'm not going to touch too much, or I'm not going to touch on those. Probably the one of the biggest changes in MQ as far as clustering is clustered topics. And clustered topics are administrative topics with the cluster attribute defined. Information about cluster topics is pushed to all members of a cluster and combined with local topics to create a different topic space at each queue manager. When you define a cluster topic, the cluster topic is published to the full repositories. The full repositories then push the cluster topic definition to all queue managers within the cluster, making the same cluster topic available to publishers and subscribers at any queue manager in the cluster. The queue manager on which you create a cluster topic is known as a cluster topic host. The next few slides provide a simple cluster topic scenario. Slide 26, please. The scenario described here uses three queue managers in an MQ cluster, and an MQ administrator is used in this scenario to publish and subscribe to the topic. There is a tech note provided later that describes how you can use another user ID and setting up the proper authority to publish and subscribe to the topic. We have three queue managers, QM1, 2, and 3, and with 1 and 2 being full repositories, and the cluster topic object name of test topic being created on a full repository on the local queue manager 1. The next slide shows the defining of this test topic. Slide 27, please. The definition of the cluster topic will be pushed or fanned out to all the queue managers in the cluster. In contrast, the definition of a clustered queue is only provided to the queue manager that is asking for it. In Queue Manager 1, where the topic is local, the display of the topic shows the name of the topic, which is test topic, the topic string as PubSub version 7 created on cluster called new cluster. The display from this local queue manager is going to provide different results than if doing a display from a remote queue manager, as shown in the next slide. Slide 28, please. Using the display option on a non-local queue manager is different than on a remote queue manager, QM2 as in this example, and if you don't use the additional qualifier on another queue manager within the cluster, you will get an AMQ8147 WebSphere MQ object, in this case, test topic not found. So if we use the type attribute with cluster, we will be able to display all the results of the topic details as shown in this example. For more information or examples of clustered topics, there's a tech note provided for this on slide 29, please. The purpose of this tech note is to provide some sample scenarios for using a topic in a cluster and to perform publish and subscribe pub/sub operations on that topic from the local key manager and the remote key managers. The other tech note is to document what authorizations are needed for non-MQM users and document the error messages that are issued when a non-MQM user ID user that, in this case, for example, a non-member of a MQM group on Unix tries to publish, subscribe, or resume a topic in MQ version 7. Knowing how or what to troubleshoot is always helpful, as provided on the next few slides. Slide 30. We can look for things like the MQ processes that are running under the MQM ID by using the ps-ef and grepping for processes running under MQ or AMQ, for example. This command and to look at the repository manager to see if it's still running. We can look for things such as channel statuses, as previously shown, to see if they are running or in a retry or stop state. And look for at the system cluster queues if they're put, get enabled, and look at whether or not there are messages on the system cluster command queue or the system cluster transmit queue. Slide 31. Queue managers that have duplicate queue manager IDs may have been deleted and then recreated and redefined. The cluster will continue to function correctly with the older version of the queue manager being ignored until it ages out of the cluster completely after about 90 days. Suspending or resuming a queue manager can be used when maintenance is required on a queue manager or to suspend a queue manager temporarily without impacting the rest of the cluster. Some causes of a queue manager going into suspension might be either the remote queue manager is not available or there is an incorrect parameter in either the local manually defined cluster sender channel definition or the remote cluster receiver definition. You might check whether the problem is the availability of the remote queue manager, or are there any error messages, and is the queue manager active? Is the queue manager's listener running? Is the queue manager's channel able to start? And are port numbers correct? These are all things that would need to be validated. Displaying a channel status, and if it shows in a retrying, the channel is reattempting to establish connection. Either the remote full repository queue manager is not available or there's a bad parameter in the cluster sender channel definition. The connection name or con name may be incorrect. You can try altering the cluster sender channel definition, then stop and start the channel. These are just a few troubleshooting tips using the display command. Now to look at some of the more common reason codes. Slide 32, please. If your application receives or gets a return code 2035 MQRC not authorized when trying to open a queue in a cluster, but the authorization for that queue is correct, it's likely that the application is not authorized to put to the cluster transmission queue. Applications getting a 2085 unknown object name when trying to open a queue in the cluster, queue manager where the object exists, or this queue manager may not have successfully entered the cluster, make sure that they can each display all of the full repositories in the cluster. Also make sure that the cluster sender channels to the full repositories are not in a retry state. 2189, cluster resolution error. When trying to open a queue in the cluster, some symptoms could be the queue is being opened for the first time and the queue manager cannot make contact with any full repositories. Make sure that the cluster sender channels to the full repositories are not in a retry state. For example, using the display plus QMGR queue manager type status. If the queue is correct in the cluster, check that you have used appropriate open options you cannot get from a remote cluster queue, so make sure that the open options are for output only. Also note that this error may also occur if information that a particular clustered queue manager has about an object is out of date or conflicting with what's in a full repository. Old information may be due to the fact that partial repository did not get the latest information about this object from the full repository queue manager. This issue would demand AMQ-RFDM outputs from full and partial repositories for further troubleshooting. Slide 33. Look to Chapter 4, Troubleshooting of the WebSphere MQ Queue Manager Clusters Guide for additional references on MQ version 6 and MQ version 7. More often than not, when looking at first failure support technology files, otherwise what we call FDC files, will be helpful to our team in determining cause of a clustering-related problem. And TechNote 1229905, WebSphere MQ Clustering, this is a compilation of the most common problems and questions regarding WebSphere MQ Clustering, and it's not solely intended for new MQ cluster users. Slide 34. For references on more advanced topics on how to use QManager aliases, reply to QAliases, and QAliases, see Chapter 4 of the QManager Clusters Manual. The WebSphere MQ All Versions and Platforms link gives reference to all MQ platforms and versions. And for references to the PubSub User's Guide for version 7, visit the last link there. For more best practices, let's take a look at slide 35. The first link is 15 WebSphere MQ best practices in designing, building, running, and maintaining WebSphere MQ solutions. And for additional support pack and downloads for the WebSphere MQ family of products, visit the provided link there as well. Applying the latest support packs is one of the best methods of ensuring that you have the latest and greatest updates for MQ to help avoid potential future issues. Slide 36, please. Must-gather is what it says for our support team. The must-gather helps provide our support team with a more accurate depiction into any potential failures within the MQ environment. And it helps us with our troubleshooting and analysis so as to better ensure quicker recovery and proper solutions or methods of recovery are performed. As I mentioned before, the AMQ-RFDM is a helpful utility for dumping MQ cluster information. And there's an example of the command being used in this slide. Slide 37, please. The two main points here are recommended fixes for WebSphere MQ and fixes by version and release. For additional educational opportunities, let's take a look at slide 38. The support page provides primary support resources to anything ranging from latest fixes to probe IDs found in FDC files to AMQ error messages, to name a few. The self-assist is IBM's vast array of online resources and tools. Technical exchange webcasts is where you can learn from technical experts through knowledge sharing and have questions and answers to various WebSphere topics discussed. The course list provides course description, schedule, and enrollment information for WebSphere training opportunities. And for WebSphere MQ certification prep, visit the tutorial in the last link. And to wrap things up on slide 39, use the WebSphere MQ Queue Manager Cluster Manual as guidance for configuration, administration, and troubleshooting. Be sure and search the support database for any recent fixes and solutions. Reference best practices, troubleshooting, and must gather for additional help guidance. And be sure to stay up to date with the latest maintenance and fix packs. Thank you, everyone, for attending this presentation. Yona Johnson and myself will be available for any Q&A you may have after this presentation. And with that, I will now turn the presentation back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Tim, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Carissa, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Steve, your line is open.
Regarding this MQ cluster, I was advised a few years ago that even though it has all the benefits, but sometimes it's very difficult to debug when you have problems. Is that the case still?
Well, it kind of depends on the size of your cluster and how your cluster is set up in your particular environment. Debugging something in this basic cluster example would certainly not be something that's, you know, it would be certainly be something that's administrative, wouldn't be too difficult to do.
I guess, for example, you know, it creates a lot of dynamic queues, and then if you try to trace by following where the message goes, and obviously if you start doing a cluster, it's going to grow over time, and so it's going to become bigger and bigger.
That's correct.
So do you have to take that into consideration in your design and say maybe, you know, I don't want to go too big with the cluster, MQ cluster? Especially if you start adding in, you know, like pop-up clusters.
Exactly. I mean, it's all in the architecture and how you design your infrastructure and how many clusters you're going to have, how many full repositories you're going to be having, how it's going to be distributed in your environment. There's certainly a number of considerations there, not only from an administrative standpoint, but from a support standpoint and running the environment more efficiently and growing it.
Do you mind if I ask another question? May not be related to this MQ cluster, but, you know, with the pop-up, they were talking about two topologies. One is the cluster. The other one is hierarchy. You know, if I want to keep it simple, should I just go with hierarchy still? And how long would that, will IBM support that hierarchy topology?
Well, that would have to be something we'd have to research, and again, it kind of goes into play in how you're setting up your infrastructure and your capacity and the scope of what you're trying to do.
Okay.
So that'd be a difficult question for me to just, you know, tell you one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bill, your line is open.
Hi. I have a question about interoperability. We're currently still have a 5.3 version cluster that we're upgrading to version 7. And I'm just wondering if there are any known issues or anything that I need to be aware of whenever I'm doing the upgrade. Is there full communication? Everything is compatible? It is my understanding that is the case, and I'm just wondering if you know anything else about that.
5.3 on which platform?
AIX, Windows, AS400, mainframe.
Okay. Yeah, well, you're dealing with a lot of different environments there. Should work. That's the best-case scenario. That's all best I can tell you.
Right.
But who knows what kind of things that you might run into as far as your application compatibility with running on those newer versions. But it should work.
Right.
Okay. Okay, and I have a second question. If you have a single queue manager participating in more than one cluster, do they still use the same system cluster transmit queue? Or is that advisable, or should they have their own queue?
No, they do. They use the same cluster transmit queue.
Okay.
Because they're in the same cluster.
These are two different clusters.
Well, different clusters would use a different cluster transmit queue. By design, it should work with if you have a queue manager, as I mentioned, I believe in slide 9 there, if you have the cluster set up, or the queue manager in one cluster, it's going to use the system cluster transmit queue for that particular cluster.
Right.
Right, yeah. Basically, if you have overlapping clusters, whether you send to A or B, it will use the same queue.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Jeff, your line is open.
I have a quick question. Is there any value or benefits to add the traditional channels within among the queue managers within the MQ cluster?
Not sure what you mean.
For example, we have, let's say we have an MQ cluster, 3 queue managers in the cluster,
mm-hmm.
and two of the queue managers I use conventional channel, add additional conventional channel, Q1 to Q2, then Q2 to Q1.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any benefits?
I've seen this done before, and most of the customers do it as kind of a fallback in order to be able to send their data through if the cluster is out of business.
Yeah.
For some reason, yes, it's been done.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sampath, your line is open.
We have AMQRR MFA process. Do we need to get for this process from the full repository or partial repository?
The process, AMQRR MFA process?
Right.
What do you mean by getting it from?
Whether the repository is running or not, you know, we need to look for this particular process for the cluster to work, right? So do we need to check on the partial repository or on the full repository? Or on both ends?
Well, yeah, on both ends. You want to check to see where, if it's running on both ends.
Okay.
Either on a full or partial repository.
Right. Just to sum it up, each key manager, which is in the cluster, must have AMQRR MFA process running.
Okay, cool. I have a second question. When we get 2189 cluster resolution error, you know, this is, I think, you know, this is quite often I have seen this error. In this case, you know, what is the, you know, the best solution we have to, you know, the best approach to resolve this issue? Do we need to, you know, normally delete and recreate the, you know, partial repository or, you know, how, you know, refresh the cluster or what we have to do really?
Kind of depends on what's going on. That would be something where we, again, would need the AMQRFDM output. And then if you could open a PMR to our support team, we could take a look and see what exactly your next steps would be.
True, and also I would like to add, in most of the cases, the rule is that if you do get a 2189, gather the AMQRFDM from the key manager that got the error as well as the full repository in case there is a discrepancy about a queue in the info in both of the key managers. So, and there is a little tip. You can try and republish the queue back into the cluster. All you would have to do is do an alter for that queue on the key manager that hosts this queue, and it will push every publish to every member of the cluster. After that is done, your partial repository will be able to see the queue again. And when that is done, we would like to have another AMQRFDM taken the same way to see what went wrong in the cache.
Okay. So there is, I mean, only the IBM support can resolve this issue, or we can also, you know, troubleshoot and what got really, you know, damaged or what got really not updated?
Most of the time, we will have to take a look at that, to look at the dump, to see what's what.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sid, your line is open.
I had a question. I was trying to create a cluster for the first time, and I was unable to get the sender channels to connect initially, and then I found when I put the port ID in the receiver channel definition that resolved the issue and everything started talking together after that. In all the examples I saw, I never saw a port referenced on it. Is that because the examples assume the default of 1414, and if you're using a different port than that, you need to provide that on the receiver channels?
You're exactly right. The default port for MQ is 1414. So once you set that up in there, the receiver and sender side started talking to each other. That's what you saw.
Now on the receiver channel, is that information for the connect, the con name, is that what's used to build the dynamic sender channels as well?
Yes.
Okay.
When you build that, right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, there are no questions.
Thank you, Carissa. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.